Lori continued to drive, then to stop and make the switch. The van banged over a pothole and pulled left.
"Watch it!" Yates yelled. "You don't want to get stuck!"
Corey turned the wheel to the right and kept the van on the road, barely. Several similar incidents occurred before they finally spotted the glow of the lodge lights. Slater patted Rowley on the shoulder.
"Almost there."
When Rowley didn't respond, Slater checked his pulse.
"How is he?"
Yates asked.
"Weak," Slater said. "Pick it up, Corey," Yates ordered. "Faster!"
Ananka and Dylan sped over to the meadow parking area and down the road back to the lodge. They were about halfway to the building when she spotted a flash of brake lights in the forest ahead that had to belong to the van. Riding on rims and the remains of tires had slowed it considerably. Ananka kept on the road until she caught the first direct sight of Slater's vehicle. With Dylan close behind, she veered into the woods and carved a path between the trees that would take them to the lodge. The van came up the gentle slope leading to the parking area next to the lodge.
"Take us around back," Slater said. "We've got to get him to a doctor," Yates argued.
"No shit, but he needs blood."
Given the nature of the trials, the lodge had a supply of standard and non-standard first aid supplies, including pouches of blood plasma. Corey drove the van behind the lodge and stopped near the kitchen door.
"Bring your car over," Slater said to Yates. "I'll get the blood. Corey, you stay here with Mr. Rowley. Don't wait for me to get back before moving him into the sedan."
"Which one do you want?" Ananka asked.
"I'll take Mr. Security Chief," Dylan replied.
"Shout if you need help."
"I won't."
35. Ricky led Rosario and Tasha through the forest in the general direction he'd seen the other captives run. After they'd been going for several minutes, Rosario let out a low, "Psst." Ricky looked back, and she motioned for him to stop and get down. As he did, she and Tasha moved up beside him.
"I saw something," Rosario whispered.
"Where?"
She pointed ahead to the left. Ricky surveyed the forest, but didn't spot whatever she'd seen.
"A person?"
he asked.
"Not sure. Big enough, I think."
"I'll circle right and you..."
He remembered Tasha was there.
"I'll be okay,"
Tasha said.
Ricky looked at Rosario, unsure.
Rosario said,
"Give her your gun."
Ricky had a pistol and a crossbow. He handed the gun to Tasha, butt first.
"You know how to use this?"
"Point and pull the trigger?"
Tasha said.
"Right. Will you be able to use it?"
A moment before she nodded.
"If I need to."
"Good,"
he smiled.
"Just try not to use it on us."
He and Rosario went their separate ways, leaving Tasha hiding in some brush. Ricky went as wide as he thought necessary and arced back around toward the point Rosario had indicated. Every 20 feet or so, he paused and listened, but whatever Rosario had seen was either gone or had stopped moving. Onward he went, closing in on the spot until he was only a few yards away. Nothing there but the trees and the ground and a few bushes. As he stepped closer, he saw Rosario coming his way. He headed toward her, but then spied movement out of the corner of his eye. He twisted around and brought the crossbow up to his shoulder.
"I would appreciate it if you did not pull the trigger,"
Liesl said.
She held a rifle pointed at the ground.
"Holy crap," Ricky said. "What the hell are you doing here?"
Rosario hurried over, and the two women hugged.
"We are very glad to see you."
"Damn right we are," Ricky said. "Where are Ananka and Dylan?"
"A little busy at the moment."
"But you all came for us?"
"We did."
"That is so sweet."
Liesl looked around.
"Did something happen to Tasha Patterson? I saw her run into the woods with you."
"Oh, right, Tasha. Hold on."
Ricky hurried back to where they'd left the woman. As he neared the bushes, he noticed the muzzle end of the pistol sticking out between branches.
"Take it easy. It's me. Don't shoot."
He escorted a relieved Tasha back to the others. Rosario said,
"I told Liesl about the hunters following us."
Liesl did not look happy.
"What's wrong?"
Ricky asked her.
"Ananka did not want us to kill anyone and lose a potential information source unless it was absolutely necessary."
"I think we can chalk up those three assholes as absolutely necessary. I mean, they were trying to kill us."
He paused.
"If it makes you feel better, Rosario did leave their guides alive."
Liesl didn't look like his words made her feel much better.
"There were three other hunters and guides, I presume," Ricky said. "Tell me you took them out."
"Ananka took care of one, and we were able to remove the people they were hunting."
"Did you remove their tracking bugs?"
"I do not know."
"Then the hunters are going to find them wherever you took them." which is why we need to hurry.
Liesl started walking toward the southwest. Ricky jogged up next to her.
Wait! What about Slater and his people? We need to do something about them, too.
Ananga and Gillen are handling Slater, Yates, and Riley right now. As for Slater's people, they are no longer a problem.
Ricky grinned.
Now that's what I like to hear.
Per Ananka's instructions, Morgan and the three former captives barricaded themselves inside the building where Eduardo and the other two had been held less than half an hour before. Given that there was only the one way out, and their survival was completely contingent on Ananka and her team being successful, it was a gamble. But if they'd stayed outside and tried to make it off the lodge property on their own, they would have never made it. After the door was secured, they searched for anything they could use as weapons. They found an unlocked rifle cabinet, but the only things in it were several sets of shackles. They took these, thinking they could be swung at an opponent if necessary. Morgan took up position at the door and pressed her ear against it. The thing was thick and heavy, and she had no real hope of hearing much of anything through it, but she could think of nothing else to do.
They are coming back for us, right?
The female captive, Claudia, asked.
They'll be back, Morgan said.
Are you sure? Maybe we should see if we can find the way through the fence.
Gerald, the African-American guy, frowned.
There is no way through the fence.
You don't know that. How could you? You didn't have time to look.
He's right, Eduardo said. They just said that so that we would keep running and not just sit down and wait for someone to shoot us.
That can't be true. There's got to be a way out.
Morgan looked back at them.
There is a way out, through the front gate. We'll use it when my friends come back.
No one said anything for several seconds.
They are coming back, right?
Claudia said.
Absolutely, Morgan said.
She had seen Ananka and her people at work and knew they'd be a match for groups 10 times their size. 10 quiet minutes passed before she heard a faint scratch coming from the other side of the door. Morgan pressed harder against the door and closed her eyes to concentrate. The door handle rattled. She jumped back surprised, but then shoved her shoulder against the door in case whoever was on the other side somehow opened it. Eduardo joined her a second later, and then Gerald, and finally Claudia. More rattling, then someone pounding on the door, and a muffled,
"Open up!"
Mr. Ford banged the butt of his rifle against the door again, and repeated his demand that those inside open up. Tracking the prey had been difficult at first. That changed when Mr. Hawks's observer had hinted at a possible solution to the hunter's problems. A price was agreed upon that would be split between the two guides, and from there, it had been a simple task of following the men's instructions. It was a surprise to everyone that the prey turned out to be holed up in a building not far from the meadow where the trials had begun. According to the observers, it was used as the holding area for the prey, and this was the first time any had ever come back to the building. More importantly, they said it had only one way in and out. Mr. Ford hit the entrance again.
Open the damn door!
Liesl could hear the man yelling before she, Rosario, Ricky, and Tasha had reached the far side of the ridge. The question was the hunter alone, or was the remaining fellow killer with him? They had a quick huddle, then Ricky headed around to the north end of the building, and Liesl around the south, while Rosario stayed with Tasha. Liesl circled wide to the rocky outcropping, where she, Ananka, Dillon, and Morgan had watched the building from earlier. She unshouldered the sniper rifle and put her eye to the scope. She counted 4 people, 2 hunters and 2 escorts. They were trying to get the door open without any success. She checked her watch and waited until go time. When the second hand hit 0, she picked her target and pulled the trigger.
Enough,
the muffled voice on the other side of the door yelled.
If you don't open this now, we will blow it open, and there will be nothing left of you.
Claudia's eyes went wide.
Do you think they can do that?
Who cares if they can? Eduardo said. If we open the door, we will be just as dead. You have 1 minute. If I were you, I'd...
An odd sound, almost like an animal screeching, followed by more of the same. Then everything went quiet. Morgan put her ear against the door again.
What's going on?
Claudia asked. Morgan shushed her. She thought she could hear something but wasn't sure. 30 seconds later, someone knocked on the door again, only it was more a rap than pounding.
Morgan, it is Liesl. You can open the door.
Relief flooded through Morgan. She reached for the bar that locked the door, but Eduardo put his hand over hers.
Are you sure it's one of your friends?
He asked.
I'm sure.
Maybe they're using her to trick us out.
If they are, then it means my friends have failed and it doesn't matter what we do.
She pushed the bar out of the way and pulled the door open.
Liesl stood on the other side, a rifle in her arms.
Is everyone okay?
Yeah, Morgan said. She and the others came outside. Four men writhed on the ground, clutching their legs. Two had metal bolts piercing their knees, while the other pair appeared to have been shot by more conventional means.
Hey, lady cop!
Ricky, one of Ananka's colleagues who had gone missing, smiled and nodded at Morgan. She looked around.
Tasha was with you, wasn't she? That's what Liesl said. Where is she? Where?
Two figures emerged from the south end of the building. Rosario, the other missing team member, and Tasha. When Tasha saw Morgan, she stopped and stared, clearly not expecting her to be there. Morgan ran over, smiling bigger than she ever had in her life. She threw her arms around her girlfriend, lifted her off her feet, and planted her lips against Tasha's. Joyful tears ran down their cheeks.
I thought I was never going to see you again, Morgan said once they stopped kissing. I was sure you wouldn't, but you're here.
Tasha sounded like she still couldn't believe it.
I'm here.
They kissed again. Liesl, Rosario, and Ricky checked the injured men and knocked out the ones who weren't already unconscious. Then everyone pitched in, dragging the men into the separate cells and locking them in. When they were finished, they began hiking toward the lodge. 36. Dylan let Yates get all the way to the sedan before closing in. As Yates climbed into the driver's seat, Dylan rushed over in a crouch, yanked open the passenger door, and hopped in. Yates dived for the center console, obviously going for a gun. Dylan poked him hard in the forehead with the suppressor end of his own weapon, stopping the head of Scalarian security in his tracks.
Hello, Mr. Yates. Now why don't you just sit back?
Yates leaned back, rubbing his forehead.
What's in the compartment? Dylan asked.
Wouldn't be a gun now, would it?
Keeping both his gaze and his pistol aimed at Yates, Dylan opened the center console and extracted a Glock G43 9mm.
Well, looky here. I was right.
What do you want?
Yates said.
What do I want?
To be honest, I'd love to be back in my room asleep, but that's not what you meant, is it?
It's not a matter of what I want, Mr. Yates. It's a matter of what we are in the process of doing. Go ahead. Ask me what we're doing.
Yates did not oblige.
Fine. I'll ask then. What are you doing, man holding the gun?
Thank you for asking, Mr. Yates. What we are in the process of doing is shutting down your little killing factory.
You're never going to get out of here alive.
Why? Because you have an army of men beyond the ones we've already taken out? Well, we know there are a few still out there. You do have that delivery coming into Scalarian tonight, but you're in luck. The FBI is helping you out on that.
The color drained from Yates' face.
You're FBI? Do I sound like I'm FBI?
Dylan said, playing up his Irish accent.
Of course we're not FBI. They've got too many rules.
Then who are you?
You know, that's a good question.
We really could use a name.
We'll have to get somebody working on that. For now, you can think of us as a group of individuals who do not approve of what you're doing.
Which means you're here to kill me.
You're in luck. I'm not here to kill you, only to make sure you don't go anywhere. But if you force my hand, I will do it. Now, if you could please toss your keys over here, that would be grand.
Dylan had to waggle the gun to get Yates moving, but eventually the keys landed at his feet.
You are going to kill me.
Mr. Yates, I already told you I wasn't, and I'm a man of my word. I am, however, going to have to hobble you.
Dylan shot Yates in both ankles. Yates screamed and tried to bend toward his injuries, but was thwarted by the steering wheel.
Do you feel that's enough to keep you here, or do I need to take out one of your knees, too?
Dylan was pretty sure Yates hadn't hurt him.
You're right. No sense in wasting the bullet.
Dylan smashed the still-hot silencer against the side of Yates' head. The man crumpled against the door, but didn't black out. A second hit did the job. Dylan was sorely tempted to spit on him, but decided it would be a waste of good saliva. He attached zip-tie tourniquets to both of the man's legs, then climbed out and headed back around the side of the lodge toward the van. Slater entered the lodge cautiously. Whoever had attacked them at the field could have colleagues waiting inside. The kitchen was unoccupied, as was the hallway to the basement entrance. He put his fingers against the basement security screen and yanked the door open. He took the stairs down two at a time, touched the security screen at the bottom, and hurried to the other end of the floor where the medical room was located. In addition to several packets of plasma, he grabbed two infusion kits, half a dozen rolls of gauze, a bottle of hydrogen peroxide, and two rolls of medical tape, throwing everything into one of the duffel bags hanging on the wall.
By the time he reached to the upper hallway, 4 minutes had elapsed. He jogged back to the kitchen door, pushed it open, and was 4 steps inside before he realized he wasn't alone. A tall black woman sat on the edge of the prep table, smiling at him. Though he'd never seen her before, he knew she was Sean Raimi, the associate of the Mex woman he'd prepped for that night's trials. "There you are," she said. "I've been waiting for you." Slater dove back at the door and rushed into the hall. What he really would have liked to do was head down into the basement again, where there was not only another way out of the building, but also weapons he could use to deal with the bitch. But he knew he didn't have enough time to perform the security scan, so he raced to the end of the hall and took the servant's stairway up to the second floor. "Ugh," Ananka said, after Slater reversed course back into the hallway. She'd done enough running for the evening and really didn't want to partake in another chase. It was her own damn fault. She should have waited in a spot where he wouldn't have seen her so soon. Another 2 steps into the room and he wouldn't have gotten away. She pushed herself off the table and jogged over to the door. She checked out the hallway earlier when he was downstairs, and she'd seen the fingerprint scan protected door. She expected to find him there now, trying to head back to the basement, but instead, he was way down at the other end, disappearing around the corner that led to an upward set of stairs. She ran after him and hustled up the steps. Upon reaching the second floor landing, she could hear him on the next flight, heading up to the third level. She followed. The new landing led out into a long hallway moving down the center of the floor. Slater was about 30 feet away, running for his life. Ananka thought about shooting him, but he was moving around so much she was worried she'd kill him. Not that the asshole wouldn't deserve it, but besides the need to preserve the information he had, killing him would be letting him off easy. He and his relatives deserved to spend decades locked away in a deep, dark cell. Slater heard the woman run onto the third floor behind him. Damn it. No way could he let someone of her kind catch him. Maybe the project was finished, but he had no intention of going down with it. If he could gain just a handful of seconds, he'd have enough time to get back down to the basement and grab a weapon. He dug deep and quickened his pace. As he reached the halfway point of the third floor, an idea struck him. His cousin's suite was ahead, and Raleigh had mentioned more than once he kept a pistol in his nightstand, both here and at home. Slater might not have time to break down the door before the woman reached him, but there was another way into the apartment. He needed to throw her off his track long enough to use it. In the stairwell at the far end of the hall were 2 sets of steps, the main one leading back down to the second floor, and a narrower, steeper set, tucked around the side of the doorway that led up to the attic. Slater raced up the ladder and into the nook where the attic entrance was located. When he opened the door, it emitted a low creak. He slipped inside and left it where it was, to avoid causing more noise. As he started across the attic, he heard the woman run into the stairwell below. Ananka heard a groan ahead. Metal or wood, she wasn't sure, as if it had been barely audible. It had definitely come from beyond the doorway Slater disappeared through several seconds before. She slowed when she reached the entryway and peeked through in case he was waiting for her on the other side. No Slater, just a stairwell leading down. She rushed inside and started down the steps, but stopped before she went far. She should have heard his footsteps either running down the second floor corridor or on the stairs heading to the ground level, but there were none. She was about to continue down when she heard a low whine. She looked back the way she'd come and spotted the narrow, half-hidden staircase leading up to a 4th level. She smiled. "You're tricky, Dalton Slater, but not that tricky." Slater worked his way around the junk-strewn attic to a dormer window above his cousin's suite. It had been a while since it was last opened, so it stuck a little before finally giving way with a squeak. He slid it up and poked his head out. Perfect. Raleigh had taken the rooms that had been called the Majestic Suite back in Stanhope Lodge's heyday. Not only did it have 2 bedrooms and a living room, it also had a spacious balcony that sat 10 feet below the window. He backed through the opening until he was hanging from the frame by his hands, and then dropped the remaining few feet to the wooden deck. The French doors to the suite were locked, but 2 hard shoves from his shoulder broke them loose. He rushed inside and ran into the bedroom Raleigh used. He paused near the foot of the bed, not sure which side his cousin slept on. There was nothing on either nightstand to indicate if one was used more than the other. Slater went to the left, since that was the side he slept on at home, but the nightstand drawer was empty. He hurried back around the bed to the right side. Ananka crept up the stairs to the 4th floor and pushed open the door. Beyond was an attic littered with boxes and bags and other forgotten items. She spotted Slater climbing through a window farther down the room. The moment he disappeared, she hurried over and peeked out. A balcony was not far below. Though she didn't see Slater, she did see a door leading back into the building was open. She climbed through the window and dropped quietly to the balcony. Slater was not in the main room, but she heard a drawer opening in the room to her right. She moved over to the doorway in time to see him move down the side of the bed. He opened the drawer of the nightstand and started to pull something out. All right! Slater grabbed his cousin's Beretta. Now he could show the bitch who was boss. He raised it to make sure it was loaded. One moment it was there in his grasp, the next it was tumbling through the air, accompanied by a geyser of blood erupting from Slater's palm. Now see what you made me do. Slater turned to find the woman standing in the doorway. Slater cradled his injured hand in his arm. Ananka could tell he was in pain, but he didn't yell. Twice, his gaze darted from her to where the gun lay. Leave it, Ananka said. My first shot wasn't luck. What do you want? At the moment, nothing except you walking in front of me. Now come on, we're keeping the others waiting. I'm not going anywhere with you. Ananka walked over until she was just out of his reach. You are an idiot, aren't you? We either walk out of here together, or I shoot you in the head and drop you over the balcony. What'll it be? Slater chose to walk. They exited the building through the kitchen and approached the van, where Dylan was standing next to the open driver's door. Rally still slumped in the passenger's seat, but the driver's seat was empty. Any problems? She asked.
None. The kid and Yates are tied up in the back of the van. Had to take out his ankles, though.
The kids? She said, surprised.
What? No, Yates. The kid was more than happy to let me tie him up and administer a little sleeping juice.
Dylan looked at Slater.
Evening, Mr. Slater. He switched his gaze back to Ananka. I see he's still walking.
He was on the third floor. I wasn't going to carry him down.
He's not on the third floor now.
Good point. Ananka shot the mass murderer in the foot. He dropped to the ground, screaming. Dylan scoffed.
You could have at least waited until we got him around the back of the van.
Together, they put Slater in with Yates and the unconscious driver and applied their meager first aid to the man's foot and hand. They then bound him with zip ties and shut the back door. Ananka moved around to the front passenger door and opened it. The half-conscious Rally started to fall out, but she pushed him back into his seat. She slapped his cheeks.
Hey, pretty boy, wake up.
Rally moaned but remained unconscious. She pinched his nose and put a hand over his mouth. After a second or two, his eyes flew open. She let go. He sucked in air and then clenched his teeth as he became aware of his pain.
Hi, Devin, Ananka said.
You,
he whispered, his face hardening.
Yeah, me. I'm so glad you remembered. Look, I know I should have called before coming over tonight. Sorry about that. And I brought a few friends with me, too, which was kind of a dick move, I know. Worse yet, we seem to have ruined your party. I hope you can forgive us, she snorted.
Just kidding. I don't hope that at all. Taking you down has been our pleasure. He seemed to struggle with how to respond. She tapped him on the cheek. Save your energy. Someone will be by to collect you, but it might be a little while. And you don't want to die before they do you? She shut the door and turned on her comm.
Liesl, can you read me?
Go for Liesl.
Where are you?
About a quarter mile from the lodge.
Ricky and Rosario?
With us. And Tasha and the others too.
Any injuries?
Not one.
Now that's what Ananka called a successful mission.
We're all done. We'll be waiting for you.
37. While Liesl and her group made their way to the lodge, Ananka and Dylan searched it for keys to the cars in the parking area. They came up with three sets, which meant more than enough seats for everyone. There were hugs and smiles among the team once everyone was back together. Ananka even allowed Ricky a quick embrace. For the most part, the former captives looked both relieved and stunned at the turn of events, while Tasha looked elated as she clutched Morgan. The FBI will show up here soon, Ananka said to the freed prisoners. They're going to want to talk to all of you. If you'd rather not, let me know now and we'll make alternate arrangements. The young Hispanic guy, who'd been introduced as Eduardo, raised his hand.
Okay, she said. I'll see that they don't get your name and...
No, he said. I'll talk to them. I want to talk to them. It's just...
There were others who were in the truck with me when I was brought here. A girl named Sonia.
I don't know the others' names. What happened to them?
You haven't seen them? Ananka said. He shook his head.
There were several people in the barn, Ricky said. Maybe she's there.
That's probably it, Ananka said. Or they could have sold her. Everyone looked at Tasha.
What do you mean? Ananka said.
They bring in more people than they need for their games. The extras, they sell. Ananka cocked her head.
That's what you learned, isn't it? That's why they took you.
Part of what I learned.
Dear God, one of the former captives said. There's information somewhere about this? Ananka asked.
Yes.
Do you know how to access it?
Tasha grinned. We don't need to access it. I have a copy. A meeting was arranged. The location, a sedan in the parking lot beside the cash bar. The time, 2:45 a.m. Present were Ananka, Rosario, Special Agent in Charge Lisa Franks, and Special Agent Stuart Taylor. It was agreed beforehand there would be no record of the event. From the agents, Ananka and Rosario learned the incoming shipment of people had been intercepted and the parties involved rounded up. Ananka and Rosario gave the agents a rundown of everything they knew about Rally and his cousins, while providing a light-on-details account of what had happened that night in the woods near Stanhope Lodge.
Incapacitated how? Franks asked.
Let's just say you'll want medical personnel going in with you, and the sooner the better.
Any deaths?
Taylor asked. A beat. Yes, three for sure.
Taylor looked at his boss. A triple homicide? We can't just let them walk away.
You can and you will, Ananka said. We all know that. But if it eases your mind, it would be fair to label anything that happened there tonight as self-defense.
Self-defense, are you?
Taylor, Franks chided. You say there are witnesses? Yes, they will be happy to tell you everything they know. I'll text you their location later. There are also others who were taken that are still in Rally's system and are in the process of being shipped out to buyers as we speak. You'll need to move fast to retrieve them.
How are we supposed to find them?
Taylor asked. Ananka pulled out the zip drive Tasha had hidden in the leaning dead tree west of the access road to the solar farm. Everything you need is on here, plus enough evidence about everyone who's ever been involved with Rally and his cousins to keep you busy for years. She started to hand it to Franks, but pulled it back. Just so you know, this isn't the only copy, so don't sit on it for too long. She and Rosario had made a quick stop at the hotel to pick up their bags before coming to the meeting. On the drive to the cash bar, Rosario had backed up the data to her laptop. Taylor's eyes narrowed.
Are you threatening us?
I am. Ananka held his gaze for a moment. If there's nothing else, we have places to be, and you have people in need of a little medical help before you throw them in jail. She and Rosario climbed out. Ananka and Rosario joined the others at Casa de Artista.
Hey, look at that, Ricky said. They didn't arrest you.
He had not been in favor of the meeting.
Any problems? Liesl asked.
No, Ananka said. But I think it's better if we don't stick around. She walked over to where Tasha and Morgan were standing.
The disc was right where you said it would be, thank you.
You gave it to them?
Yes.
They will use it, won't they?
I guarantee it.
Tasha stepped forward and pulled Ananka into a hug. Thank you for coming for me.
It's what we do.
Once they parted, Ananka held her hand out to Morgan.
I'm sorry I misjudged you at first. We couldn't have done this without your help.
You weren't the only one who misjudged. Morgan bypassed the hand and hugged Ananka, too.
You should go home and get some sleep while you can, Ananka said. I'm sure the FBI will be contacting you in a few hours.
There were goodbyes and more hugs, and then the team was alone.
Everyone packed? Ananka asked.
The only one who didn't nod was Dylan.
Problem? She asked. No problem, really. I was just kind of wondering.
Yes?
Well, any idea how long it will be before our next assignment? I mean, there's no sense in heading home if they're just going to call us right back.
None of them had talked about continuing on, but they all looked at Ananka as if they wanted to know the answer. So did she.
I guess we should find out.
She pulled out her phone and called the administrator.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Town at the Edge of Darkness, The XCOMS, Book 2, written by Brett Battles, performed by Allison Johnson. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by Brett Battles. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.